I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Jill. She had multiple birth complications and postpartum depression. Let's talk about it. So tomorrow, let's set the stage then. Tomorrow, right now for us, is Sunday. But today, when you're listening to this, if you listen to it when we release it, is Monday. So yesterday was. It's multiple birth. What
awareness.
Is it?
Awareness.
Awareness
multiple
day.
Birth awareness day.
And then technically the next one is 364 days away. And then one after that would be like.
Yeah, just do the math, too. But essentially it's May 28th.
May 28th.
Is Multiple Births Awareness Day. And so what is that? What do you mean by multiple births? Does that mean like a woman who has more than one baby, there's like an awareness day for that?
Twins, triplets, quadruplets.
More than one baby at the same time.
Because that would be really interesting if it was just like, hey, anybody who's had more than one kid, this is your day.
That's what I thought for a second. And I was like, that's weird. So my mom should be super stoked tomorrow.
You guys are going to learn about all the language. It's like multiples and singletons.
Right. Okay. Right? They're like, what are we becoming aware of? They're just like, no, just more of a celebration.
Wait, is singleton an actual, am I a singleton?
You're a singleton.
I think he's a simpleton is what they call them.
You're both, a singleton. Technically. Yeah. You're a singleton.
Right.
You're a twin.
I'm a twin.
You're a twin.
That's really
Brian's
funny.
A twin, so
Brian's
I'm a multiple.
A yeah, so, you're a multiple.
So should Brian be stoked about it tomorrow?
Yeah.
Brian's totally. Mom for sure.
Yeah.
Well, why wouldn't you guys be stoked as well? I mean, I'm your best friend, so
I am
you should
stoked.
Appreciate that.
I am, but not as stoked. As you should be.
I don't know if it's so much as being stoked as just.
Right. What's the stoke level for tomorrow?
How about talking about issues that pertain to multiples.
Bingo, well, which
perfect.
Is what we're going
to
do.
And I think that's what we're here to talk to you about today. First off, I want to say, I don't know if you guys know this, but we're sitting with a Halifax celebrity.
Oh,
I do know this.
The one
what,
and only
the
Jill Chappell. No, the Jill Chappell. Come on.
Did you just call her the Jill Chappell? I mean,
okay.
As if,
if you want to follow, if you want to follow her on Twitter, it's at Real Jill Chappell.
But you,
Jill J Chappell.
I've spent many a time watching you on the TV here in Halifax. Mm-hmm. A news. Personality. What would you like call yourself?
I'm a former news personality.
Former news personality.
Now,
that's right.
Well, I always will be, I suppose. But
you will be. Always.
Yeah, I quit, and we'll get to that.
Yeah,
we'll get to why that happened.
All right.
So you had reason why multiple birth awareness day. Sorry, did I get that right?
Yeah. I think you nailed it.
Multiple births awareness day is because you are someone who's had multiple births.
Jill's had
multiples.
Twins.
Yeah, I had twins.
When did you have twins?
I had twins just over 2 years ago. So the date would have been April 8th, 2015.
And how did you find out? Like, was it the moment of the babies being conceived? You were like, whoa, whoa there.
This was a really epic time. No, it was way later.
I think you just gave me twins.
Oh, really? Oh. That felt like twins.
You mean like quantitatively it felt like there was a lot in there?
Oh, whoa.
Is that what you were asking?
Brian, we're going to get an email about that.
Brian, my mom's going to listen to this. Okay,
speaking of which, can I ask a question that we might cut anyway, just
sure.
just because I'm really interested about it?
Yeah.
And I asked Taylor.
Wait, this is way too early for this conversation.
Well, it's going to come up. It's coming up anyway.
I don't want to listen. I'm going to plug my ears.
Okay, you can plug yours.
I'm so excited.
So one of the ways that I try to make myself feel okay with the fact that my mom had a C-section is that's a weird way
because there's a way
it.
Because there's a reason why you shouldn't feel okay about it.
No, we definitely have to cut this because somebody's going to be offended by this, but yeah, I always say to my friends, I say,
yeah.
So what I usually say is I say, hey guys, one thing that's really cool is that my penis has never been through my mom's vagina.
Oh my God.
So
Brian.
Is that a bad joke? Is that like something that's not okay
and
to
then
say?
Brian, then we're in the car and Brian goes, hey Taylor, has your penis ever been through your mom's vagina? And I go, yeah, I guess technically it has.
You know what that joke is good for? Live shows. Keep that for the put that in your pocket for the live show.
Okay, that but we'll cut that out, okay?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, okay, that's good. Not staying in this. That is not staying in this.
Okay. Anyway, great to know that we started this on the right
all right,
foot.
Let's actually get into it. We're hitting the tangents pretty hard.
So like one I'm 26, I'm moving into this part of my life, and my girlfriend Kyla, she's a few years older than me, and especially a lot of her friends are starting to have kids, and this is like the first time in my life that I'm moving into a place where I'm starting to learn about what we're kind of talking about, is that the dangers or the possibilities of what can happen when you have a multiple birth scenario. And right. I had no idea that there was the potential for complications or a higher risk.
I don't think I do know that now.
But isn't that kind of like common sense that if you're one pregnancy is difficult as it is, like we've done an episode on miscarriages and the complications of pregnancy. And if you're having more than one child at the same time, isn't it?
Yeah,
isn't
it totally makes sense.
More likely that you would think that there'd be more issues.
But I mean, us singletons over here might not right. know that. And plus we're also men.
Yeah,
so,
I was going to say I'm a guy. That's why I don't know.
Right.
I think that, like, Brian's right. Like, it automatically, when you are having more than one baby at the same time, a twin or triplets, twins or triplets or quadruplets, if you know, or even more.
Or like John and Kate plus eight or something like that.
But John and Kate plus eight didn't actually have all of them at the same time.
They didn't have
they're fucking posers.
Yeah.
It automatically becomes a high-risk pregnancy. Automatically.
Yeah,
so
once you add more than one.
As soon as you're having twins, you are having a high risk pregnancy.
Right. Now, what does that mean? High risk for what? Like, what are the different, a plethora of things?
Right. So I can tell you the plethora of things that I went through that were
yeah.
high risk.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, certainly the biggest thing is preterm labor. So having your babies early. There's just any
Which
amount
comes
of
with...
complications can happen with a high risk pregnancy, but specifically with twins or more, because you're having more than one baby at the same time.
Brian, that was really good logic then.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised nobody else picked up on
that.
Well,
you're a multiple, so that's, it's kind of unfair.
And you know, I have to shed my own bias here because obviously I see the world differently than you guys do.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
And having your an early pregnancy then leads to a whole bunch of complications with the baby or potential risks or
Absolutely.
Things like that. I mean,
right, it's like twofold. So what was your experience?
Well, we started to talk about the question. You wanted to know when I found out
how I knew
I was having twins.
So it wasn't the moment of conception.
No.
Okay.
No.
Check.
Shockingly.
Check.
Yes. But we went in for our 20-week ultrasound, which is because you guys haven't done this yet. That's just your basic, everybody goes in for that. That's when you go in for your first ultrasound to look at the baby and make sure everything is progressing as it should. And unless you've had some problems before that, you might, but
my,
that is the standard.
My sister had hers and I watched it from here, from my living room.
What?
Isn't that crazy?
Facebook Live? She Facebook Live'd it?
No, there's this service that they have at the hospital and she went in for ultrasound. And they can stream it to a private link and you can send it to your family members.
Wow, that's crazy.
And you can hear the heartbeat and stuff like that.
She was
here. Yeah, yeah. QE2. Wow.
Is that scary?
Or no,
IWK. Is it scary to watch that? Because
it was super neat. And like I saw his face and she like points, she's like, there's a little penis. Like it's a boy. Like
that's
it was
amazing.
Fucking cool.
I feel like anytime I've watched an ultrasound, I'm going, where's the baby?
I
or what am I looking at?
Yeah, what am I looking at? All I see is this kind of watermelon shaped space with black and white. I don't know.
Well, this they, I think
looks like a
shit,
silent movie.
I think their shit has been upgraded. They're like Interstellar type right. type
it's a 3D
technology.
Model now.
Yeah, well, it depends it was, where yeah. you are.
She was pretty yeah. late, so maybe it wasn't
yes,
the 20 week thing.
Or if she, sometimes if you're older, because there's a lot of women who are having babies at older ages. So if you're over 35, you are up on the seventh floor. Or if you're high risk pregnancy, so I ended up spending a lot of time on the seventh floor. I believe it's the seventh floor. You go and get your ultrasounds there, and it's like completely different.
Oh, why is that? I mean, sorry, I get the high risk part. Why the 35? Is that because over 35 they?
It's called a geriatric pregnancy.
Whoa, that's harsh.
That is harsh.
That is the
oh, you're 35.
But
you're
yeah,
geriatric.
When, no, but when it's over 35, again, it becomes high risk. Just
they should call it a mature pregnancy.
Yeah. Do they send you mature? Home with one of those? Do they send you home with one of those? One of those pill things that say Monday, Tuesday, Thursday for all yeah. your pills. They're like,
is that a geriatric joke, Taylor?
Yeah, that is a geriatric joke. That's right.
I thought you guys would like that term. That's
yeah, it is. It's yeah. good. So you go in for this 20-week
yeah.
Ultrasound.
Yes.
And how do they break the news to you?
Well. So you can
uh-oh. Break the news.
No, literally. Yeah. You know, so like they put, it's terrible.
Hold the jelly.
On. Yeah. They put the gel on your belly and then they start to do the ultrasound and, she like starts looking around and she's taking a little bit of time and then she's like, okay, there's one head. There's two.
Whoa.
And my husband and I were like, what? And she was like, there's two. You're having twins.
Well,
now I like, you know, when someone decides I'm putting myself in those shoes, like if Bridie and I today were like, all right, we're going to have a kid. That's a big, for me right now in my life, at the point
huge
in my life,
decision.
That's a huge decision. Right. And to commit to that is like, okay, our life is going to change like drastically.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through the process, you conceive the baby, the pregnancy happens, and it's like getting really excited. We've got a baby coming. We've got mm-hmm. a baby coming.
You do up like your one room in your house with
yeah,
one crib.
All that
like-
shit. And then this moment, I'm imagining this moment, and, you know, not to take away from, because, you know, having twins, is that's amazing.
Choose your words carefully.
But I can imagine that, at least for myself, I would imagine that first moment of hearing you're having twins, I'd be like, oh no. Like, I feel like, oh no, would be the thought that would come to my
oh,
mind.
Because, I'd be the exact opposite.
Because I'm not ready. It's like, oh no, I haven't prepared for this. Like,
right. But that's, oh, you, yeah, that's you right now.
Yeah. Well, and I'm wondering if that at all was the case for you guys. Like if it was kind of a scary thing.
Well, I think when there's any amount of unknown, there's certainly some fear and uncertainty, but we like it was exciting. We were shocked and it felt again like just finding out that you were pregnant again.
Right.
Like we were calling
right.
everybody.
Yeah. There you go. That's a cool way of looking at it.
We got to play some like, you know, sort of jokes on right. people, like guess what we're having? And they'd be like, oh, because
a dragon.
Maybe it's a boy. They know if it's a boy or a girl, you know,
right.
like, yeah. nope.
So it was a high fiveable yeah. moment. Like it wasn't a
yeah,
moment
but
of
we
like,
didn't sleep that
what?
Night. Neither right. of us slept that night.
What a unique feeling. Like, so, I feel like that is a feeling that you don't get very often. You know what I mean? Like there's not a lot of yeah. feelings that would be equal to that feeling of finding out you have a twin or like a triplet.
Yeah.
Well, from the medical standpoint, so if that's a high, let's, I like the high fiveable moment. I think that's a very
I like
good
that too.
Moment. So if
sure.
that's a high five moment for you,
yeah.
from the medical standpoint, do the doctors or the person who's doing the ultrasound, are they like, yeah, congratulations. However, this is now what you need to
Not
know.
Not the ultrasound technician. She actually left the room and gave us some time to sort of process. And then mm-hmm. she came back in because then she has to go through, you know, checking over each baby and looking at all host of different things to make sure that everything's okay. But yeah, immediately, I think it was the same. If it wasn't the same day, it was the next day. I got a call from my family doctor, you know, who was like, okay, you know, we need to make, you know, everything looks good. Basically, you know, gave me some details about the pregnancy and asked me if I wanted to know if we were having, you know, boys or girls or one of each.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was like, you know, like, this is a high risk pregnancy. Like, things change now. And like, she was very clear about the fact that, like, you know, this is exciting. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yay. Everybody is, you know, excited about having twins,
but we got to get real about this.
This is very serious.
Did you have a birth plan?
No, I didn't. And that's a good question to ask, because I think a lot of people this day and age like to have a picture of what it's going to be like. And some people want to have their babies at home, or some people want to have them in the hospital, or some want to have drugs or not have drugs, or don't want to have interventions.
Have their baby at the circus, have their baby at the local swimming pool.
People want to have choices or have things done in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do that after reading and talking to people, because I knew that
it's so unpredictable, right?
All I wanted to have was healthy children. I wanted them to be okay.
Mm.
And that whatever the doctors thought was the best course of action to make sure that they were born healthy and that I was okay, like, that I wanted them to take the reins, because you never know what's going to happen when you go in there to have twins.
Now, when your doctor, your family doc, called and was like, listen, we got to, you know, you're high risk pregnancy now. We got to get real and talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a first for you? Like, was that a discovery for you? Were you kind of surprised?
Totally. And she was very clear about it. And then, you know, I went on to see, an obstetrician and, you know, lots of other specialists as the date got closer. Everybody reiterated that it was a high risk pregnancy, and these would be the challenges, and this could be the challenge the further along we got. But I still in my head was like, it's going to be all good. Like,
I know lots of twins. Yeah.
No, it wasn't even that. I just was sort of like, oh, you know, like, yeah, babies, you know, twins typically come early. It's okay. It's not going to happen to me. Like, I'm super healthy. I take really good care of myself. I'm following the doctor's orders. Like, this is going to be okay.
No,
like,
do twins
my head,
ever
I'm just
come?
Telling myself it's going to be fine.
Do twins ever come on time? I think
the average is like 35 weeks.
Right. And it's 39 or 40 for
40 would be like a full term pregnancy.
Yeah.
And then anything before 37 would technically be like a preemie.
Did you guys come premature, Brian?
No, not technically, because I think we were just like a couple weeks early.
Okay. All right.
So not, we weren't technically premature babies, but we were early.
And
I was only 5 pounds when I was born.
And my boys,
and look at you now,
for
Brian.
Context, my boys were 3 pounds and 8 ounces and 3 pounds, 13 ounces.
Whoa. That's
and when so you think about that from the perspective of 5 pounds versus 3 pounds, it's like, well, when you're comparing it to 5 pounds, that's 40% less.
Well, a normal, like a singleton is usually like 8 to 10 pounds, aren't they?
That's pretty big.
I think
seven and a half, eight. Yeah.
And by that, I mean, like, imagine if you were 40% less than you weigh now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
it
would be crazy to think about. Yeah.
And my brother used to always say, you know, they were smaller than a loaf of bread. So a good way to sort of like think about it, like in context.
And also terrifying, like cute, but scary as fuck.
Yeah.
Right?
That goes without saying,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So, like, we don't need to mention it.
So you have the babies super early.
Yeah, but even before that. So even before I have them super early, I had a preterm labor. So I started to have cramps. Like, I would compare them to like menstrual cramps. Like, I started to have cramps, and anytime. My best friend is a doctor, and she was like, if you feel anything, like anything at all, go into the hospital. So we went in, and sure enough, like, I was in preterm labor, and that was at about 27 weeks.
What does that mean, preterm labor?
It means like you're going into labor
before
early. Like, way before, like, way you too should. Early.
Term is the 39 or 40 weeks.
Oh, term. Okay, yeah, sure, pre-term. Sure. Yeah. Right, okay. I thought there were I'm thinking of trimesters. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. The three trimesters, not three terms. Got it.
So I was hospitalized, and they gave me a a blood pressure medication. I think it was magnesium sulfate. Anyway, the whole point reason of them giving that to me is because it stops the contractions and it smooths the large muscles. So it was able to stop the contractions. And then they also gave me steroid shots, which they would do in any case like this with where there's the risk of the babies born early so that their lungs will develop if they are born.
Whoa.
Or develop more quickly if they are born preterm.
Whoa, so, that's so crazy.
Yeah. So we got, so I think I was in the hospital for 5 days, if not 7 days.
And was that,
five.
Was it scary?
It was really scary. And my mom was away on vacation. And so she was terrified. And, but, yeah, so that, so I guess, so that, anyway, we were able to kind of get through that. And in a lot of cases, the doctors may put you on bed rest, but they sent me home and they were like, we just want you to be on house rest. And I guess I should say earlier, like I was put off work at 22 weeks. I wasn't allowed to go to work after 22 weeks.
By so, your work's choice or by,
no, by the doctor's by the docs. Orders. Wow. Yeah. But I still went out and did, you know, like I'd go to the grocery store if I had to or something like that. But most of the time I was just like, you know, binging on Netflix.
Were you technically not allowed to do that? Like, were you kind of going,
the parole
were you like,
officer
fuck it, I'm going
in.
To the grocery store.
They didn't really give me any
parameters.
Yeah, strict parameters. Yeah, but I was.
They were just like don't bench press like anything over 500 pounds.
Oh, no, there was right, no right.
Definitely
exercise.
Definitely like don't play any more football.
No exercise.
Right.
Like walking was about
no
jump, it.
And, no jumping jacks. No,
but
no
then
stomping
once,
on the ground.
I wasn't allowed to exercise after I don't think, yeah, only mild. They were like, you
WrestleMania.
Can't do anything intense.
Right, right. Yeah. Right. No, no wrestling. Interesting, interesting.
And then I went into labor again at almost 33 weeks, 32 weeks and 6 days. And that's when the boys were born.
And that's when they came out.
Yeah. It was Kyla's friend who I was talking to you about before we started recording.
Yeah.
She went into the hospital and she had to lay down. Her instruction was, don't get out of bed for 3 months. Because yeah. any
oh.
yeah, because yeah. any
bed source,
it
central.
Was like any stress could induce labor.
Yeah.
Oh.
And sometimes they will, you know, like you'll be on a bed, like kind of with your head down and your butt up. You know what I mean? Like they'll have the bed on a
right.
an incline or a decline, so that like to try to stop it. Like there's very extreme situations.
Like gravity just helps and keep it in.
And this might be too much information, but sometimes they'll even
never
stitch.
They'll stitch your vagina shut?
Your uterus, so that you like, so that the baby will stay in.
Like, that was whoa, pretty whoa. Extreme. I was like, what?
Well, I mean,
that
like,
makes much more sense. The uterus makes yeah. more sense.
You're a simpleton. It's okay.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Just stitching the vagina
did not
shut.
In my case.
Oh my God,
but,
what an
like,
idiot.
That can happen in singleton cases as well. Not just
that's right. really extreme. So they yeah. would go in and sew your uterus shut. Wow, man. Just so that the baby doesn't come out.
So what, like oh, how?
I don't
how,
know details about that, but I've heard
right.
from friends that that
how risky is it to have a baby at 32 weeks? Like obviously the closer you get to that 37 to 40 weeks is best.
Yeah, of course, the
but,
longer they can stay in the bed.
So, but like, sort of, but like what, how risky is 32 weeks? Is it really, really, really fucking bad?
No. I wouldn't say that, like, but that's the thing. Like for me,
it's case to case. I think.
Yeah, it's totally case to case. But when I, you know, when I'm feeling, when I would be in the NICU with my boys and like feeling bad about how horrible this situation was and feeling totally helpless, you know, I'd look at my friends who were there, whose daughter was born at like, I believe like 24 or 25 weeks.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
And was like, you know, small enough to fit in their hand and was like having heart surgery, you know?
Oh my God.
So, right. I mean, there's all these extreme cases around you and then you feel guilty for feeling bad, like for feeling bad
Lover's
about your own
guilt.
Situation,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a big
yeah, I mean the
mind
thing,
game when you're in there.
Yeah,
because
totally.
You're really getting your own head and
yeah, and the thing that you just have to, I think that you just have to like remember and realize is that everyone's situation is different.
Totally.
And just because your situation is not as extreme as someone else's, it does not make it any more, you know, like validated that it's a
any less traumatic.
Any less traumatic. Right. That's right. It's hard. It's a hard situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, especially when like your child's or children's life is on the line, then
yeah.
whether it's 5% chance that they don't make it, or 95% chance, there's still a chance, and that's where the fear comes from, the fact that they might not make mm-hmm. it, right?
That's right.
You're always going to be able to find somebody who has a worse situation or a better situation.
Yeah.
Around
so
you.
when I was hospitalized for preterm labor, they had the neonatologist come up and speak to me and my husband and talk us through, you know, what would happen if they were born now, and then what would happen if they were born later, and like basically walk me through, like, if they were born now, how everything would go. Like, they would, you know, when the babies came out, like, they would be put in like a plastic bag up to their neck to keep the body warmth inside, and then they'd Whoa. Be like rushed off to the NICU.
Oh my gosh.
Right? So like, in my head, I'm terrified about this happening. But again, he's telling me all these details about, and then each week gets better and better and better. So the longer you can keep them in, the better. But totally preparing me for worst case scenario. Well, maybe not worst case, but, you know, like the challenges I would face if they were born while I was there the first time. But again, in my head, I'm thinking, nope, I am keeping these babies in my belly. I like, this is going to be okay. This is going to be okay.
Is there actually anything that you can physically, like, do you have any physical control over that? Like,
not that that I'm aware of. Mm,
yeah.
But whatever the doctor said.
But then again, like, you go back, like, now, you know, there was so much, you replay so much in your head. And I'm like, if I had known, I wouldn't have gone to the grocery store. I wouldn't have gone to Costco. I wouldn't even have walked to the end of my driveway. I would have just stayed on the couch. But in my head, like, I just kept telling myself that everything was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's what we all do, right? You got to
stay who knows? Positive. That probably, maybe that did,
well, I was
maybe
able
that did its
to
job
keep
and kept them in
for
there for as long.
5 weeks.
That's right. That's exactly what I mean. It's like that you might have done that.
Right.
So the babies come out. And
there's this, that's complicated.
Yeah.
They don't just come out.
Uh-oh.
Did you have a C-section?
So I deliver one of the babies. And then the other baby starfishes and refuses to come out. He's like, are you
that.
Kidding me?
This
like,
place
I'm
is
not
warm.
Ready to be born yet.
Yeah,
like,
it's warm as shit in here.
And
I'm coming out there in that cold doctor's office.
Fraternal twins, so they were in separate sacks, right? Which, here's another crazy thing for you. I shouldn't say the word crazy. That is not the right choice of words on this podcast.
Oh, we use the
that's
word
okay.
crazy all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Okay.
But here is a wild medical feat.
Nuts.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
They have
it's nuts.
Since had their, like, doctors have physically delivered one twin and then kept the other twin inside the mom for, like, I think 4 or 5 weeks.
Whoa.
What?
I didn't
this
know
happened
that.
In the States. Because my husband and I were like, couldn't they have just kept Max in there longer?
Just like, yeah, they just like just yell in. They're like, don't come out. You stay. And just like,
Dan
the dog father was there going, yeah. Okay, now give it a hard tug and then some positive affirmation.
Like, but that would be really wild because then you'd have twins, but their birthdays would be on different days.
I know.
Whoa, that's trippy.
I can't.
Was that like did you dream about that when you were a kid growing up that you like had your own birthday?
Yeah, because I cried a lot because I always had to share and it was like this. Yeah.
Rough life.
Oh,
I just can't wrap my head around how it's like, how the fuck did we get this far? Like, how did we even get to this point? Like, how did pregnancy, it's this crazy thing where we like harvest this little human inside our bodies.
Yeah.
And then there's all of these inherent risks associated with it. And we're at this point in you know, time where we have the most incredible technological advances to like make sure these babies live.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think back to like the days of like, you know, like the Middle Ages. It's like, holy shit.
Well, dude,
a lot
the Middle
died.
Ages. Think about
so
like,
many
just
died.
Like 50
yeah.
years ago.
But, just like, but it makes me, it just makes me go like, whoa. Man, I'm here today.
But dude,
like,
think about
I'm
it.
I'm one of the because for some reason the lineage like that I come from didn't were just so fucking lucky that they didn't run into any issues. in their pregnancy, like my great 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 grandmothers,
yeah, but
and them before them and all the way up till now, it's just like, whoa, my mind blows.
I think the thing that you forget is like way back in the day there was way more wizards around, and then they could just cast magic that would like,
yeah, that's right,
make
it was the enchantments and
and you know, like since the wizards have died off, then now we rely on
and which is why some people are bad in life, like they're the remnants of the black magic birth that happened, and I mean that's obviously the way to explain all that. What's crazy is that if you think about the way that we almost, it's much more common to have one child than it is to have twins. I have no idea what the statistic on that is, but I'm assuming it is.
Yeah, there's not, like how many twins do you know? I think I've met like maybe a handful of twins.
It's becoming more common
now because of IVF.
Statistically,
interesting.
That's right. But because if I wanted to have kids, that's what they told me. If I want to have kids, I have to do it
in vitro.
Mm-hmm. And they say, when you do that, the chances of having twins are much greater.
And Kyla's friend did in vitro.
And also, if you're over 30, you have a greater chance.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
See, I'll just gloss over this, and then I'll go to what I was about to say. Is that you think about all the species on the planet that have like 10 babies?
Yeah.
You know,
like a kitty litter.
They just poop out like
kitty litter.
So many babies. Yeah, and you're like, whoa, the fuck did they do that?
Bigby came from a litter of 13.
Like, that's 13. Insane. Okay. I know we pass it off as something that we just know. And we take it for granted. We just go, oh yeah, dogs have litters of this size, cats have litters of this size, and humans have one. But it's fascinating when you think about it that we have all these species and everybody has a kind of a different birth mechanism. But what I was going to say just after that is I don't really, Kyle and I have kind of had a lot of conversations about not really wanting kids. But I've always said that if someone told me that you can make the decision to have twins, that I would have kids if I could have twins.
Whoa, but no.
Well, this is really enlightening, although it hasn't changed my perspective yet, but maybe it will.
Not that you wouldn't want twins, but it's a high risk pregnancy.
Right, yeah.
So
you're bringing on more.
Yeah.
Something could happen.
But Taylor's
to
not giving
the babies,
Taylor's not having
or,
that baby. Right?
Yeah,
just pass it on to Kyla. Whatever. Right, Tay? That's what you're saying.
That's my stance.
Okay, reining in. Let's get back to Jill.
Jeez, the babies haven't even, one has been born, but the second one hasn't even been born yet.
Yeah, I know. So
he starfishes, and they can't get him out. They literally have to try to reach in and pull him out.
Oh, Jesus.
Which, okay, I should preface that I have had an epidural at this point because the epidural, they also try to use to stop labor. Because they were still trying to stop the labor at 32 weeks and 6 days.
Is the epidural euphoric?
No. It's a
numbing,
pain killer.
Just numbs,
so you just don't, like, you feel pressure and not pain.
Got it.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I know there's stuff going on, but, like, the pain is kind of, like, irrelevant. Plus, you're also, like, in this intense headspace because I was focused on delivering a baby, which we did. I delivered him. They had to use forceps, though, to get him out. And then they're like, okay, trying to get a baby number two, can't get him out. And they're like, okay, we're going to have to do an
by reach in. Do you
C-section.
Mean like literally reach in?
I don't know. Honestly, because like I couldn't really see anything, right? And
like,
I'm kind of out of it.
Right.
Mm. And like exhausted. And, you know, we'd probably have to like consult the birth notes or like talk to my husband, who I think probably stuff is a little bit hazy for him too, because
I
it was
could imagine.
Very
traumatic.
Intense.
Totally.
We weren't expecting to have our babies, but where we were. And I should preface that, like, we were in the OR with my family doctor, who is a prenatal specialist, so she was helping to deliver the babies, an obstetrician, the obstetrician resident, at least two nurses, and I would say that there were at least 5 or 6 more people in that room.
The studio audience. Just
totally. Because we're in the OR and then like
someone to hold
become
the applause
more
carts.
Complicated.
All the global news fans. Just
oh,
no
God.
Videos.
Oh God.
Nothing. No, but they So then they decide they have to do an emergency C-section. So I don't know if that's because they can't get him out or if his heart rate has dropped. Anyways, something's going on. I don't know the full details.
But get him out.
They have to get him out now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, okay, well, we're going to do the C-section. And I started becoming like really nervous about, well, I don't like having the C-section, right? Because I'm conscious and I'm like, never been in the hospital until, you know, my experience with being pregnant and like totally freaking out.
So like,
and
please don't cut me open.
Kind of like in my head, I'm like, don't, I don't know how I feel about this. And then I'm like, they're like, I don't know, like take a brush and they're like, can you feel this? And I was like, yeah, I can feel that. And then they were like, okay, well, we're going to top up your epidural. So then they like brush across my abdomen again. And they're like, can you feel that? And I'm like, yeah. And then they're like, okay, we're going to have to put her under.
Oh my God.
So then they have to put me under.
That sounds better though.
Then my husband can't be in the room when I'm under anesthetic, so they have to send him outside
Why is that?
Here's the other thing is that not necessarily better, because being under anesthetic,
it's risky. It's more risky.
It also presents another hostful of risks, you know, like respiratory risks and all that kind of stuff. I mean, maybe it's a little more serious if you have respiratory problems like myself, but I think if you're pregnant.
Do you have CF?
Yeah, I have cystic fibrosis. Oh, okay. It's a chronic lung disease. Right. So yeah, I can imagine that like that's probably a last resort to put you under. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I
can't
imagine. I think that's like also I was go-to. Just like, I don't want to feel myself being cut open.
Oh, of course
like,
not.
Just let me like close my eyes
and
but
wake up.
You
and
know,
be over.
But I want to see my son being born. Yeah. Right? Like that's the other part too. Is like Xander's born. They show him to me. And they ask me, you know, like his name, and I say his name, and the obstetrician is like, "That's my father's name."
Whoa.
Yeah. Cool. It's not John, is it?
Xander.
Oh, sorry. I thought the other baby. I was like, because John's pretty common.
His middle name is John, though.
How did she present him? Like, I'm picturing like Simba on Pride Rock.
Well, that's kind of what it felt like.
Okay. Yeah. Sweet.
It was another high five
moment. Yeah.
But then they've got to whisk him away because they got to check him. And right. He's early. So they got to put him in an incubator and make sure everything's good. And like, so I don't even get to hold my baby. He's just like, here he is, gone.
See ya. Yeah, yeah, right.
I have a
let's focus on the other one that's still stuck inside you.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements?
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Since we've kind of been talking about like the stress of like this whole situation of giving birth to your kids.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't have as like visceral of a reaction to it if I didn't. I don't know if any of you guys saw Jimmy Kimmel do his monologue.
I did. I watched a little bit of it and then I started to tear up and I stopped.
Oh my God, dude. Like it was so, and like, and I know that's a totally different situation, but it's the same in the way of like something is happening while my child is being born and I don't know I can't predict the outcome of it. And it's like gut wrenching.
And that would be called a traumatic birth, traumatic birth experience.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah, I was, and especially like to see somebody on live TV.
Yeah.
Who's a comedian? Like, oh my God, dude. That guy broke my heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
So
you're talking about him. So, and you guys can probably relate to this situation a little bit more than you can like me, you know, being knocked out and having the baby. Picture my husband you know, who's been standing by his wife's side while his, you know, twin boys are being born early. And then they're like, you've got to go.
Yeah. Oh
my
God.
So they send him out. They send him with Xander to go to the NICU. So the nurse takes him and then he's watching his son like in an incubator in the NICU, like by himself with the nurse. And then they bring him back and he's standing outside the door of the OR. He has no idea what's going on. He doesn't know if his wife or his son are going to come out alive.
Yeah.
And then he's just literally standing there. And then he said he heard the baby cry. He heard Max cry. And so then he like breathed a sigh of relief. And then, you know, they did all their checks or whatever. And then they brought Max out. So then he went with Max to the NICU. And then Max started having trouble breathing. So they had to put like a CPAP machine on him so that to offer him breathing support. So he said like it was like the most terrifying moment because he's there. His son is struggling to breathe. And he has no idea what's going on
with
me.
What's with you? Yeah.
So anyway, like they stabilized Max, but he said like that was like gut wrenching and like terrifying, and he didn't know what to do. And he's like there, essentially there by himself with like a nurse that he's been hanging out with for the last couple hours. Then they bring him back to see me in recovery. So he's got to leave his two newborn premature sons, three pounders basically, and come see me. And then like I'm totally out of it and unconscious.
Mm.
Yeah. And I've just been through like major surgery.
So it's, you know, clearly that entire experience was A, not what you guys were anticipating, not what you were like, you know, hoping for. It was a traumatic experience.
Mm-hmm.
So let's fast forward a bit.
Right.
Because I know that one of the things that we planned on talking about was the sort of the struggles after going through something like that. And maybe the struggles of after going through just pregnancy in general, even if it's a totally normal pregnancy, but like the issues surrounding postpartum depression. How common is postpartum?
That is a good question. I mean, I can't tell you exactly. I think it's like 1 in 5 is the statistic for 1 in 5 women will have postpartum depression.
Well, statistically in this room, it's 1 in 1.
1 in 5, I think, is what it is. But then, like your risk increases in other, with other scenarios. So if you have twins, your risk increases.
Oh.
If you have a traumatic birth, your risk increases. If you have preterm labor, your risk increases. If you spend any time in the NICU, your risk increases. So like, so you can just keep adding like the risk factors on.
So it's not surprising that you are experiencing that.
No, but in my head, again, I was like,
it's all good.
It's all good. It's going to be all good. Mm. And I chalked everything up to like, this is just what it's like having twins. Everybody told me it was going to be overwhelming. It's just overwhelming. I'm a parent for the first time, and I have two brand new babies. I have two preemies. Mm. This is just what it's like. In my head, I keep saying, I'm just overwhelmed because this is just how it is.
Do they say anything like once you have the birth and everything is kind of settled down? Do they say, by the way, there's a strong chance that you will experience symptoms of postpartum depression?
I don't remember anybody specifically saying that to me, but I do think it's important that I say that my family doctor, every time I did a well check with her, every time she checked up on my babies, every time she checked up on me, she always asked me about my mental health.
Mm.
Always. Like she would talk to me about it. She would say, how are you feeling? You know, what are your thoughts like? Are you dealing with any anxiety? Are you overwhelmed? Are you feeling any feelings of guilt? Like, and most of the time I would answer yes to all that stuff. But then I'd be like, yeah, it's okay though. It's just, I think it's all just part of this. It's having twins. It's being a parent for the first time. And I would just brush it off as like, I think that this is just what everybody goes through. How could this be anything more than that?
This might be a bit of a dumb question, but is there a difference between postpartum depression and like depression? And I mean that in terms of like the way that it presents itself. Or is it the same thing and it's just called postpartum depression because it's the direct result of having a baby?
I can't tell you exactly. Like you'd have to ask the doctor. But from what I know, for it to be postpartum depression, it needs to be diagnosed within a specific time frame after the baby is born. However, in my case, we didn't realize that that's actually what had happened until like 6 weeks ago. So let's say almost 2 years after the babies were born.
And what is that? What is a regular time frame for postpartum?
I think they say that like it has to be diagnosed within 8 weeks, maybe.
And then it can last up to.
Oh, it. I mean, it could last. It could last forever if it's never treated.
Oh wow.
I mean, but it would. I mean, it would technically. I guess it would become depression. I don't know.
Sure.
But I don't know, like the technicality mm-hmm. of it. But after going to see, I started to go see a counselor, and we figured out that that's actually
this is what you're looking
so,
at.
So you're basically you go to your GP mm-hmm. and she's asking you these questions, but and you're answering yes to them, but you're saying, you know, I am feeling anxious. I am feeling like overworked or exhausted emotionally because of trying to deal with the situation of raising two kids mm-hmm. and being a new mom. But then you're just kind of brushing it off and saying, yeah, but, you know, like this is kind of to be expected in this scenario. Yes. So then what is like the moment when you realize, okay, maybe I am a little bit more emotionally drained or taxed than what is kind of expected or what is acceptable?
I think that there were like a couple little moments along the way, but I don't think I noticed that things were really bad until last fall. So probably about like 6 to 8 months ago.
And how's that manifesting?
What do you mean?
What was really bad? Like what constituted as really bad?
Well, I just like, I was really unhappy. I was back at work at this point. I was really unhappy. I was crying a lot and I was really angry. Like I would have like feelings of rage and that was the thing that really tipped me off, because I don't think that I'm an angry person. I think generally like I'm a pretty happy go lucky kind of person. Certainly I'm emotional. So the crying was more than usual, but like maybe not necessarily out of character. But this like this rage that I'm talking about would be like it would be just for minor things like a cereal bowl being left on the counter, or like my, you know, like trying to change my son and him hitting me in the face. I would feel like anger flushing from my toes all the way up to the top of my head. Like I felt like a cartoon mm-hmm. character with like steam shooting out of my head, like, and I would be so angry. And most of that anger, I would say, was directed towards my husband. Like, I didn't know why I was feeling this way, but I would, like, just be angry at him. Like, because, I don't know, because that seemed like
a good outlet. That was just
happens, right?
Yeah, it's an easy place to, like...
partner or the person closest to you bears the brunt of, like... Mm-hmm. I couldn't understand what was going on, and so, like, that was just... That's where I was focusing my anger and like that's where I was focusing the blame.
What kind of effect was that having on the two of you?
Oh, it was tough.
Yeah.
It was really tough. It got to the point where he was like, Jill, like, I don't know what you're so angry about. And like you can't even see how angry you are and how upset you are. Like, I think you need to go talk to somebody.
Mm.
And so I did go talk to my GP and she was like, okay, like, I'm going to refer you to a psychologist and I think you should go talk to somebody. So that's what she did. And so I went, and that was like, I think around November, and I went and, I don't know, I was like really nervous about it and I just felt uncomfortable, but I went and we talked and like, I think I did feel a little bit better. And then when I went to schedule for like my next appointment, it was like I couldn't get an appointment for like a month. And then it was like Christmas time. And so I just kind of blew it off and I was kind of freaked out by the whole thing. So I blew it off. And then again, after Christmas, like I started just like, I lose your shit again. Yeah. And like just like not being happy around the boys and like crying in front of them and like losing my temper and like yelling at Mark in front of them and like us having fights in front of them, which... You know, like we always had said, like, we're never going to fight in front of our kids. Like, that's just something we're not going to do. And like, it would be like getting angry about nothing.
Mm.
And so the breaking point was I was crying one day for no reason, like just sitting there crying. I don't know, like some plans had changed, like any little unexpected thing would set me off, any change in plans. And I was sitting like in the house crying and my son looked up at me and he said, Mama's sad. And I just felt so horrible.
Mm.
And I was just like this is clearly like having an effect on them. And like, I need to do more. So I went back to see my counselor, and that's when I started going on a weekly basis. I think at that point, I quit my job and just really started focusing on myself and on them and like getting better. So through the process of going to talk to my psychologist on a weekly basis, I uncovered that, you know, I had been experiencing all of these like symptoms of depression, anxiety. She said like I was even exhibiting symptoms of PTSD.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And like that's a whole other thing, you know. And postpartum PTSD is a whole other thing.
Yeah, right.
So she said like that feeling of like rage that I would have. There was an episode, like I think it was about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks after the babies were born. So they were in the NICU, right? And so I was in the hospital for my recovery for a week after they were born. And then you get sent home. So your babies have to stay in the NICU, but you get sent home. So I had to leave them. We had to leave them and go home and then travel back and forth to the hospital, which was like gut-wrenching, right? Because in your head, your pregnancy is...
Yeah, you're like, I just had my fucking babies.
You take this beautiful picture that you post on Facebook of you just having your baby, and then you carry your baby in the car seat to your car and you go home with your baby, right? Yeah. So none of that happened.
No.
None of that. And so like I was just like... just gutted going home without my children and having to drive back and forth. And
also, I feel like the biological, desire
to just have the baby.
Just a physical separation, right? Yeah. Even at the hospital, like I was in a room on the fifth floor and they were on the NICU on the third floor.
Mm.
So, like, even that separation, right? And then I'm also on the same floor as people who've just had normal pregnancies, and I can hear babies crying at night in the room next to me, and it, like, would make me so angry because like my babies had to be two floors away and I couldn't even be in a bed beside them. Yeah. I had to be on a floor like two floors up. They are working on that. There is like right across the country, they are changing the way they do the neonatal units so that the parents can room in with the kids.
Oh,
because it's all that
is happening here at the IWK, but
that's a fucking great idea.
A process. Yeah. It's just like, it seems like a no brainer, right?
Right.
That you should be there and they want you there as much as you can possibly be there with your children.
Because the baby needs it.
Yes. They will do much better if you're there with them.
And I'm assuming it, I don't know if it plays into it, but does that separation between floors and all that stuff, does that play into the increased possibility that you could have postpartum depression? Like, does that separation
I think it did for me.
That potential?
I think it did for me too, for sure.
Because I can't relate at all, obviously. I don't have kids. Yeah. I'm not a woman. I'll never give birth.
Yeah.
I have a dog, and I know that when I first got him, I was like, I should take time off work.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to not be around him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the closest thing that I can get to understanding the desire to be around something that is new and yours and you have to take care of.
And multiply that by a million and then like deeply rooted into your like biological makeup.
One time I got a new video game and I wanted to take a week off work to play it a bunch because I wanted to get acquainted with it.
I think that is exactly what it's like. Yeah. It's like when I got Skyrim.
You're just addicted. Right.
Yeah. That definitely makes way more sense than my example of the dog. I like that one way more.
Yeah, it's certainly about equally as far removed, though.
I'm curious to know if you medicated, like for your depression.
I am now.
Yeah, and how has that changed things for you?
It was like somebody flicked a switch.
Yeah.
It was literally like you gradually, your dose gradually increases week by week, and I'm on sertraline. Hydrochloride, Zoloft is like the brand name.
Yes.
And so, yeah, gradually week by week, your dosage increases until you get to like the dose they want you to be at. But literally within the first week, even when I was taking this minuscule dose, I noticed like it felt like somebody flicked the switch and I was me again.
Mm.
Like I just had more patience. I had more energy. I was sleeping better. Like, I would be waking up through the night, like, several times a night, and, like, my mind would be racing, and I couldn't get back to sleep. And I have two-year-old boys who, like, I am chasing around after all day. Like, it is exhausting. You are physically exhausted by the end of the day. They are busy children. They don't like to sit around. They want to be outside, like, and on the go.
Did you guys want to have, like, obviously not multiple kids at once, but did you picture yourself having, like, two children?
Yeah, definitely two. Well, if not more, but
I think
probably going to stick with two.
So in retrospect, and barring, like, obviously you've had a really challenging experience with postpartum depression, but are you happy that you had two at the same time?
I love them, and I love them more than anything, and I love seeing the two of them together. And I think that anybody who has twins in their life knows that it is, or multiples, it is just an amazing experience to see these two humans bond. And just especially like to have them grow up together, like when they're babies, and to see them interact at such a young age. Like, they're so tight. And, you know, like one of my boys, like we've had to work really, like they're working really hard and learning how to share. But like one of my boys now, like if his brother's sad, like he'll, you know, take a toy over and offer him a toy and then say,
that's
happy,
so fucking
happy,
cute.
Like to try to make him happy. Cool. You know, so there's just interactions that I don't think that you would ever even get to see between siblings, like the twin. It's just that twin thing is really special.
And I should say that when I said earlier that Kyle and I have said that we don't really want to have kids, but I feel like I would want to have kids if we had twins.
Yeah.
That's what I picture. That's the reason.
Amazing.
Is because, and it has a lot to do with Brian and Dennis being, we've been best friends since we were 10 years old.
Yeah.
And it has a lot to do. I don't know if I've ever even told you this, Brian. I think I have. That I feel that twins have an amazing capacity to become really successful because of the way that they play and drive off of each other, which is totally the case with Brian and Dennis and a lot
like
of twins that I know.
Factor too, right? I think that you, like, as a very young human, you learn how to care about somebody else, how to share, and just to, like, to really, you're always able to put yourself in someone's shoes because they're always right there beside you.
Yeah. And there's a bond that's, like, obviously incredibly unique and special about twins.
So it's worth
twins.
It's worth all the work and, you know, the crazy things that have happened to my mind and body.
It's so wild to think about something's, you know, how something so beautiful, like pregnancy and, like, the birth of multiple children at the same time can also at the exact same time be so traumatic and be so detrimental to your health in terms of, like, your mental health, even your physical health.
Yeah.
Like, it just, like, what a wild exchange.
Well,
you
and
know?
That, you know, like, I think that's one of the big things is I was sort of getting to that and I completely went off track, which is typical, but you know, like, I had these preconceived notions in my head of what it was going to be like or what having a baby was like. You know, like, I was, you know, I imagined myself holding these two beautiful baby boys in my arms after I had given birth and having a picture with my husband and, like, having our first family photo and then taking them in the elevator and putting them in their car seats and driving home and putting them into their cribs and all of those kind of things. And all of that stuff that I imagined didn't happen. And and I felt so resentful for that. Like, and I would be going into the hospital on a daily basis to see my babies in the NICU. And people would be in the elevator with their babies leaving the hospital. And it would make me so mad and upset. And I felt like I had like this thing taken away from me. Well, that I never had, like, you know, like, and it was so, there's so many challenges about having babies prematurely. I mean, this is not even really a twin thing, that just being in the hospital setting makes even more challenging. That is clearly, we are doing so much right now to change the way that we treat people, and we're really starting to focus more on mental health. But it is clear that we have so much further to go.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody thought about the fact that me sitting in a hospital bed with the woman in the room behind me with her baby crying was going to make me feel awful and anxious and even worse about my situation. Nobody thought about the fact that, you know, I just, like, I'm saying me, but like this has happened to many women, you know, had an emergency C-section, delivered a baby, have to somehow figure out my way to get from the seventh floor down to the third floor, down all of these hallways, like after when I'm not even supposed to be walking to go see my children, that I can't be in a bed beside them, even though like we're in the same hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like they haven't thought.
It's like some simple logistic things.
There is so much family care that they think about, but there's so many simple things that would go such a long way to helping people's mental health that we haven't gotten there yet. We are going there. They are working towards improving that situation, but there's so many things that could have been done differently that would have made my life easier and my husband's. Here's another wild thing. So they're born prematurely. They can't breastfeed yet, but I want to breastfeed my baby. So I've got to pump milk every 3 hours so that, you know, like I start producing milk and they can have the milk. They would feed it basically through an NG tube. So it would go up their nose and then down into their stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have to pump this milk and then the nurses in the NICU said, okay, well, just give it to your nurse and then they'll bring it down to us and then we'll give it to your baby. Well, turns out that one of the nurses or a couple of the nurses weren't actually delivering the milk.
They were like, I'm drinking this myself. They're like putting it in their coffee.
They were just sticking it in a fridge and it wasn't getting to my babies like a couple floors away. So my husband found out and he like,
would have been irate.
Lost it. Yeah, well, because I'm waking up every 3 hours when I really need to be getting sleep to heal. But we're trying to feed our babies, and breast milk is obviously like superior to formula or anything else that we could be giving them, especially when they're premature.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Do you think that I just
you
in my head
countdown from 10? Oh, right. Do that.
That good. This is that it's work. it's awesome to have these conversations about the reality of birth and things like multiple births awareness day, because I think something that plays into the women and men having this picture perfect birth experience is because you're so much more likely to hear that experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
From the people in our lives, in our society, is that you're much more likely to hear the story from, you know, the person that you know through the other person that they had this perfect birth and they came home and they had their picture and you saw it on Facebook. And those are the things that get put out into the world more often.
Yeah. And I don't know that anything is perfect. I think that they are all complicated, but I think that
but we present
the
reality.
Get into the nitty gritty, right?
Right, and we present the reality, and like you know, you can go into that social media.
I was terrified to post pictures of my children when they were born because I didn't know if like people would like how that would make people feel to see these babies with tubes coming out of them in an incubator, right?
Right, but
it was like a month before I put pictures up of my children.
Like people present the reality that they would like other people to see.
I think so, but I also think it's like I think people just put the pictures up that capture that high fiveable moment.
Those high five moments,
right? Exactly. But so this is what I'm saying is that this isn't happening.
Like people aren't posting the pictures of like the things that are not those high five moments.
Right. Exactly.
Which then makes us think
and not that they need to do it on
moments.
Social media, but they're not having the conversation either.
Yeah.
Which is why this is so great to do.
Yeah.
Because it's showing that you know. Birth is complicated. It's almost never perfect. It has a ton of complications. It's almost never what you see on a birth photo that's on Instagram or Facebook. Yeah. It's a whole bunch of shit that you didn't plan for and that you had to go with the flow to deal with it.
Yeah. Having said that,
but that's what makes it beautiful.
Sure. Yeah.
Like that's what makes if giving birth was so easy and you could just, you know, like have a kid and boom, it comes out and it's no effort to raise it or whatever, then it wouldn't be the beautiful experience that it is. And that's what I think is really special about this entire thing.
Having said that, what would you say, Jill, is the thing that this whole process has taken away from you?
Well, I think that because I had so much anxiety and guilt for, you know, like the first 2 years of their lives, I mean, sometimes more than others, I don't know if I like fully 100% was it fully able to enjoy raising them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like right now, it's like, funny because I'm like, these are magic pills. I feel so amazing. And I'm the mom I always wanted to be because I have so much patience and they take away like all the horrible feelings that I had. Even when in my head, like I'll know that like I'm waiting for like the rage to happen and it doesn't happen.
Mm.
This is so awesome. Like I can really actually like slow down and live in the moment. And that like I would always have these racing thoughts and you know, I think it really would take me out of the moment. Whereas now that I'm medicated and that I'm dealing with this and I'm healing from this challenge, I'm able to be present in my children's life and my husband's life. I'm able to like to really be there and really be me, because I feel like I wasn't fully me. There was part of me that was missing. Or there was like this monster, you know, that was sort of like looming inside of me.
Now, what would you say that this experience has given you?
I think it really just has given me a greater appreciation of mental health and what people go through and how hard it is to recognize that something is wrong and ask for help.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I've had friends say to me, because I've started talking about it now, I had no idea, Jill. Like, I had no idea. You faked it so well. Even family members say, I wish I had known how hard it was on you. I would have helped. But I think part of the coping mechanism when you're dealing with something like that, and when you're a parent for the first time, is you just keep going. You just keep going because that's what you have to do. And you just do the best that you can because that's all that you can do. And I think it got to a point in my life where things started to get easier with the boys. And especially like when I quit my job, like I had time to like to process. And like it was almost like I had been pushing all of that stuff back and pushing all of that stuff down, and then it all came to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of how my psychologist described it as well. You know, she was like, you know, that's why she thinks that it was postpartum depression and anxiety and postpartum PTSD, because she said, you know, this is, you know, it's all just coming out now because you've had time to process it. Before, you were just pushing it down because you had to raise these boys, you had to feed them, you had to help them grow, you had to get them to a point where they were, and then like now you have time to take care of yourself. So I guess, I don't know if that answers your question.
I think it does perfectly. Yeah.
The one thing I wanted to get back to that I totally skipped out on was the postpartum PTSD thing.
Right.
So I had got to the point where I was saying like being separated from them, and I was having to go back and forth and be home, and all I was having to get up through the night to pump milk, and I would have so much anxiety that I wouldn't be able to get back to sleep. I cleaned my entire house from top to bottom. Meanwhile, right, I'm supposed to be recovering from this C-section. Top to bottom in the middle of the night, I would be up like cleaning my whole house, organizing everything like down to like the drawer in my basement, basically. And then I think it was about a week and a half to 2 weeks afterwards, we were home one evening, and then I just started having these like spinning thoughts of like, oh my gosh, like what is going on in my life? What am I doing? I have these like two little boys who are like, you know, like in the hospital, just to, like, and nurses and doctors are helping them to like stay alive and to grow. Like, I'm here at home. Like, what have I done? Like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a parent now. I have all these feelings, which I think they would typically would be like the baby blues, right? Mm-hmm. Like where you're like coming to this realization that your life has completely changed. So like, I'm totally overwhelmed by those feelings. And then I like just completely lose it. And I completely lose it on my husband. And I have this like took, like, again, like this rage fit and like throwing stuff in my kitchen, and I'm losing my mind and I'm screaming and yelling and like bawling and crying. And my husband's like, I don't know what to do. I like, he's totally at a loss. He has no idea what to do. And I'm like, take me to my children. Take me to them right now. And so, like, I'm still losing my mind. Mm. And he gets me in the car and he takes me to the hospital. And I get out of the car and I slam the door and I go into the hospital in the middle of the night. It's like probably 12:30, 1 o'clock. And go into the, I'm allowed there whenever I want, the NICU, to see the boys. And, like, I come in the nursery.
Because you're Jill Chappell.
No, anybody.
They're like, Jill Chappell's here, everybody.
So I come
wake
in
up, wake up.
The nurses Jesus are Christ. Like, is everything okay?
Baby.
Well, clearly everything's not okay. I'm like bawling my eyes out. And so, like, I get in the chair and they get the boys, like, they can take the boys out of the incubator and they put them on my skin, right? It's called skin to skin. Like,
yeah.
So good for them and, like, mm-hmm. Good for the mom too, because it helps with that bonding that you're lacking because you're separated from your children.
Taylor still does skin to skin with his mom.
Do you? That's nice.
That's comforting for them.
That's nice. Yeah.
That was well placed.
You guys still hug your mom.
I definitely hug my mom. Yeah.
That's where it all starts.
Oh man, I hugged my mom. The worst joke, but I didn't.
I do hug my mom, and I make sure when I do hug my mom, I just put my ear right up to her sternum and just nuzzle my cheek just above her bosom and say, "I love you, mom."
Oh man. So then I stay there overnight and sleep in a chair in the NICU with my children.
Yeah.
And that is the moment that she says, my psychologist says, she thinks is when I feel that rage, that's the PTSD.
Yeah.
That's that feeling coming over me again. And that's why it's so quick, is because
have you had
so
that
intense.
Come back? Like, since the meds, has that come back at all?
No. But there's been times when, like, I like instances where things will change, or when I'll be annoyed with something that my husband did, where I'm like waiting for the rage to happen.
Mm.
And it doesn't. Like, it is the
and you're
best.
Like, sweet.
This is the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So, and I was very reluctant to go on medication.
Yeah.
Very reluctant. And so initially when I went in to see my family doctor and ask for help, I was like, you know, what should I do? I don't want to take medication.
And they're just like, they just roll their eyes, they go,
my psychologist.
Okay, give it a couple weeks.
Like, that was probably one of the things that I said to my psychologist. And so, like, she was like, okay, we'll start exercising and all of these alternative things. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to yoga, be there, like, regularly. And then it got to the point where I was like, no amount of yoga, amount of counseling, anything is gonna fix this. Like, I am not getting any better. And then the medication was, like, overnight. And I think it's because it's like, well, I'm also somebody who's very stubborn and, you know, and disciplined. So I was like, yeah, you know, yoga does make me feel really good and it gets me, like, fit, but it also gets me in a good headspace. Mm. I can do this. I couldn't. Like, I could not overcome this without medication. I needed it. And there's that stigma associated, right? That you're now I'm a pill popping.
Those things can only
because I've got something going on in my head.
They can only things like exercise, yoga, whatever it is, alternatives to medication can only help to a certain degree, depending on the severity of what you're dealing
with.
That's
right. Yeah.
So I mean, if
there's no cure all out there,
there's a point past which medication is a necessity.
Yeah.
And
it's a shame that stigma exists to the point where it prevents people who actually just need it. They actually just straight up, you just need the medication.
Well, legitimately, and they like, just there's don't a chemical do imbalance it. In my brain.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it wouldn't have happened that fast that I would have, like, felt that differently. And I mean, Matt, like, think of all the hormonal changes that have gone on in my body over the past 2 years.
Yeah.
Like,
crazy.
Pregnancy, then I was breastfeeding, like, 2 babies for, like, 15, 16 months. Like,
And, like, medication for mental health, the perception about medication for mental health is so much different from physical health.
Oh yeah.
Like a diabetic who goes in and they go, you got diabetes. And they're like, sweet. Well, what can I do other than take insulin?
Yeah. Exactly.
Could you give me some alternatives to insulin?
Right. And they're like, try yoga for a week. Yeah.
They're like, absolutely not. There is no alternatives.
That's
you need to take insulin.
But, St. James Wort.
But that's the thing with mental health medication, because people have the idea that they should be able to control their mind. Mm-hmm. Whereas people without mental health issues can't control their own mind. So why the fuck do you think that you can if you've got something that you need a medication for? Controlling your mind in the easiest of circumstances is one of the hardest things you'll ever do in your entire life, let alone trying to do it when you have something that's that's actively blocking it.
Yeah.
So I don't know why we think that way.
We've come to time. Before we wrap it up, is there anything you would like to put out there for anybody who might be experiencing or potentially about to experience something similar to what you went through?
I think it's just so important to be completely honest with yourself and completely in tune with yourself. And if you're feeling anxious and you're feeling overwhelmed and you're feeling angry, like I had no idea that anger was a symptom. You know, in my head, like I have this preconceived notion, okay, well, postpartum depression is not the baby blues, but it's more intense depression when you're, you know, feeling despair and you're having scary thoughts about harming yourself or your kids, or you're, you know, feeling a lot of guilt. Like I knew that those were the things associated with postpartum depression. I didn't know it was like rage.
Yeah. Punching holes through windows and like, and smashing
extreme
glass.
And guilt and, you know, like racing thoughts, and I was so overwhelmed with even like, I think my mother cleaned my house for like the first year that I had the boys because I couldn't even get that done. I could barely even get like dinner on the table. I just was completely overwhelmed with everything.
That sounds like me right now. My mom comes over here and is like, I'm gonna clean the floors, and I'm like, sweet. And she's like, have you eaten yet? And I'm like, no.
Yeah, so I think it's just about being in tune with yourself and trusting your instincts. Wow. And if you even have an inkling of feeling that something is going wrong,
Jill, do you think
I
should go talk to someone about that? Fuck.
Well, you don't have a baby yet, but postpartum depression can happen to men too.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine how traumatic it would have been for your husband.
Even higher, but as you know, men are much less likely to seek help.
Stuff it down.
Especially in like this scenario.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that probably most men don't realize that
how much it can affect.
It's possible for them to have that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
Well, thank you. I know that it took a lot for you to, you know, to come in here and open up about all of this stuff, and it means a lot that you wanted to take the time to do that. And and I feel good about knowing a little bit more about multiple birth awareness day.
Totes and goats,
you know.
it's legitimately my favorite
holiday
topic of conversation.
Oh. No,
to come in and talk about women holiday. To talk about women's health, because it's something that's such a black hole to me, and something that I'm so interested to know about, because
interesting choice of word there.
It means that he can't. It's because there's an event horizon and he can't see beyond the event horizon.
Okay, so
that's
it.
Actually the scientific.
Do you have a whole new appreciation now for your mom?
Yeah, right? Yeah, I totally do.
Still doesn't care about his mom.
I love my mom, and you know what? I just find, like, even for Taylor and Jeremy and I, we all are in relationships. And to better understand what your better half might be going through is important. I think it's very important and will be like a huge benefit for us in the future too.
Yeah.
And hopefully guys listening to this.
Yeah. And guys who are in relationships with guys and girls who are like, I mean, don't be so short-sighted on.
I'm not
like,
trying
who,
to assume
who our audience is, Brian.
I'm not assuming anybody's Christ. Pronoun.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jill. Thanks again for coming in. And thank you all so much for listening. Fuck, Brian. And thank you all so much for listening. That is it for this week. Hey, before next week, head on over to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We got a bunch of stuff up there. Oh, yo, check it out. We've got a live show coming up next week, Sunday, here in Halifax, at Lion and Bright. It's sold out. Keep your eyes out, though. There might be some tickets going up, some extra tickets perhaps going up for sale.
I think there might be a few.
But maybe not. So just keep your eyes posted on Facebook, because that's where we'll drop that announcement.
But we're not entirely sure about the Toronto live show, but we're hoping that Toronto friends and fans that you'll be able to come out and take part in a live show as well.
Yeah, we're coming to Toronto on the 9th of June, and we're going to be there for a couple days, so you might catch us in the city. And hey, if you want to be on the show while we're there, hit us up.
Mm-hmm.
That is it for this week. Go to Patreon, subscribe, give us some money. That would be great. See y'all next week.
I don't know if that's like the most compelling argument. I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
And I'm Jeremy, and this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.